Start right now. Yes, exactly. We're going to still swim a little bit in the deep end of the pool. Basically, what we talked about yesterday was we started out with the whole idea of what the culture. I gave you some quotes from some of the evolutionists and atheists and so forth that are dominating our cultural models and paradigms that are established in our country, and what they think about you and me, or, if you will, what they think about religion in general. But as I said yesterday, don't be fooled when they talk about religious systems, even though most of us in here, I would hope that every one of us in here would agree that religion is indeed the problem, right? I mean, we probably all agree with that. But we're not talking about we're not talking about scriptures. Whole religious systems and the scriptures are not the same thing. But the Bill Mahers and the Christopher Hitchens and the Richard Dawkins of the world and so forth that are out every day while we are fighting among ourselves over calendars and so forth, they're out every day shaking their fist in the face of God. And while we stand by and argue with each other. And they're taking over the thinking process of our culture. We went through some examples back in the 1950s where they already said those who are proponents of evolutionary idea or just no God, if you will, had already planned that thought process would pervade every area of our life. Biology, chemicals, galaxies, stars, planets, our judicial system, the world of language and linguistics, social anthropology, finishing with religion. So the whole idea of that anti-God evolutionary thought process was all designed to pervade every aspect of our thinking. And I'm going to submit to you, it indeed does. All over the world. So we went through some examples of that, and I showed you how the evolutionary thinking process changes and perverts our thinking process. And many of us don't even realize that we think, or we've been trained to think. Remember, trained? Very good. That was cool. Okay. Trained to think from that point of view, we don't even realize that we think of time and history as just a big long line and so forth. And so that affects prophecy in particular, because most prophetic ministries think in long lines, that the Father just deals with real long lines, and we're just all marching through time on a real long line, and that there's the end of the line somewhere, okay? And the scriptures don't teach that way. They teach cyclically. And so we went through a little bit of DNA. There's a lot more to do with it, but I'm going to cut to physics. Because physics, basically, is just physical things. I mean, it's just a way of saying that. We use the quantum physics and quantum mechanics, particle physics and things like that. Those are just fancy, pinheaded theological terms that are designed to leave us and the people like you and me in the dust. Okay? Because they talk this way to each other. All right? They have a whole language system. Science does, that produces the scientific journals and Discovery Magazine and things like that. They have a whole thought process, and they converse with each other in this thing. And our government does the same thing. Congress does the same thing. When they go to pass bills, they write it in legislation ease, if you will. And it's language that people like you and me, you know, the ignorant, dummy, moronic people of the world who are just not privy, you know, to the intellectuals of the world. And it's designed to separate them from you and me. And they're the ones that are pulling the strings around the world. And so I'm simply saying I think it's time to restore the simplicity of what the Father is teaching. A lot of these things that they're discovering today and have been discovering for a long time, God already knew. In the beginning, in the first place. And you would be shocked to find out. This is one of the major reasons why I want to teach this to our young people. You'd be shocked to find out as you go back 100 or 200 years ago, of all the wonderful things that we have in our life right now, and our understanding of scientific things, including gravity and things like that. All right, the laws of our universe. If you go back, the people who discovered those, 90% of them, were people who believed in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and they knew the Bible backwards and forwards. Isaac Newton, for example. These are the men responsible for all the great discoveries in our world. And yet they were all believers in the Bible. And so I'm submitting to you that one of the reasons why we're discovering things today on such a highly technological level is because most of the people in the scientific world, excuse me, many of the people, I won't make such a boastful remark, many of the scientists in the scientific fields today are all believers in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's why we're discovering all this stuff. It's not the anti-God people, if I can use that term with you all, that are making all these great discoveries. It's the ones who believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They're the ones that are winning the Nobel Prizes a lot of times as well. How many Muslims do you see winning Nobel Prizes? Okay. Yeah, Peace Prize. Yeah. Very few. But all the scientific discoveries, less than 1%. Okay? And so what I'm saying is, if the Messiah tarries, I'm saying if the Messiah tarries, then we have another generation coming behind us and so forth. And I think that this generation also needs to enter into the world in colleges and so forth in the area of physics and chemistry and make a difference in those fields. Make a difference in your biology class and in your chemistry class and so forth. And so let's talk about some of the current things that are going on in quantum physics. Now remember, quantum physics is just a word of saying the study of really small stuff. Okay, when we talk about particle physics and things like that, we're just talking about little bitty physical things. And the reason why I say that is because Paul said that the invisible things of the world, since the creation of the world, are clearly seen in the things which are what? Made. That's the physical, okay? And so the way the Father has designed the things we can't see, which in Christianese we just say spiritual stuff. We say that word all the time. Do something in the spirit. I want to do something spiritual. You did something in the flesh. You need to do that. What does that mean? Okay. And basically, that's the unseen things of the world that we can't see. And the Father's simply saying, how do we understand the unseen? By what is seen. Why? Because all the seen came forth from the unseen. Are y'all with me so far? Now, that's what the Bible says. But see, now science, is for the last 20 years, is beginning to understand that very concept. And so they're the ones that are saying that that science now understands that the universe we live in was brought into existence by the energized vibrations of sound. So they're beginning to teach. This is a very popular, it's still theory. It's called theoretical physics. But let me tell you something, my friends. Theoretical physics is what produced your iPods. Your iPods, your Blackberries, all the little gadgets, you know, that we carry around right now. It was this kind of theoretical physics, if you will, that produced your iPods now. And it's the kind of theoretical physics that we're working on today that's going to produce the computers of the future. Do you know that in the next 5 years, we will be using computers that are run, operated by bacteria? Do you have one that's operated by bacteria? Is that what you're... Yeah. Now, see, can you imagine, Matt? Because today we take for granted those things. But actually, what you're holding in your hand there, and what a lot of us have when we operate our iPods, is you have just chunks of metal and plastic in which sound is embedded on those chunks of metal and plastic. And you're able to, a week from now, or a month from now, or a year from now, play back what's on that chunks of metal and plastic. So we've known for a long time now that sound is embedded in everything in the universe. Everything in the universe is in a state of vibration. Everything made of mass and matter in the universe is resonating, and it puts forth a sound or a frequency. Most of those frequencies we cannot hear. They're either, you know, above 20,000 decibels or below 20 hertz and so forth, but we can't hear them. Dogs can hear a few of them, you know, that we can't hear. But everything is making a sound. Everything is resonating. Everything is vibrating. And so everything made of mass and matter is actually speaking something out. All right? And we're able to tap into these things. So when the Bible talks about the rocks cry out and things like that, that Abel's blood cries forth from the earth, we've always considered those just to be fancy metaphors. Fancy King James poetry to describe some sort of spiritual thing that God is trying to tell us. But see, now we're beginning to understand that they're much more literal than we ever thought they were. And that now we even have the scientific fields involved in the world of physics saying the same thing. that rocks really do talk. Now, what do we mean by that? It's not that it's not necessarily that the rocks are able to, you know, repeat the Gettysburg Address. Okay. The point being is everything made of mass and matter absorbs sound. It absorbs what you say and what I say. We now know that we can take a stainless steel block, and the reason why they're working on, and they've already finished it, it's just that we won't hear about it for a couple of years. But one of the reasons why they're working on extrapolating sound out of a stainless steel block is because that would get rid of the famous black box, for example. In airplanes, you know, every time an airplane crashes, they're searching for the black box and so forth. And sometimes they find it, it's beyond repair. I mean, it's damaged so much that they can't get something back from the black box. Because the traditional black boxes in airplanes still carry and use the same kind of primitive recording methods to record things like you would have. You know, like remember the reel-to-reels? Boy, if you do, you just dated yourself. You remember the reel is surreal, okay? But now we know, we have the technology based upon the engineers at NASA, we have the technology to take a piece of a block, set it here in the room, I can give a lecture for an hour and a half, and they can come in and remove out of that stainless steel block every single thing that I said. Now with that understanding, because that's how your iPods and all those things work. Now with that understanding, they know they can also do it with things that they found underground thousands of years ago. Are you catching my drift? Because of the nature of how things work with sound. Now, what's interesting, of course, is that they are saying that the universe was brought into existence by energized vibrations of sound, speaking, if you will. And so it's no coincidence when you read the first 10 verses of the first chapter of Genesis, it says 10 times, and God said, and God called, and God said, and God called. So the Father already told us that that's how things came into existence in the very beginning. The worlds were framed by the Word of God. And the Word of God is what? Spoken. The Word of God contains the Torah, the commandments and the statutes and the ordinances. And how do things happen to come into existence, and how things are we blessed in this life? When you speak forth His Word, things come into existence. Okay? Now, the difference, of course, is the difference between Him speaking it and us speaking it. We have one major difference between us and God, because I'm simply relating to you what science understands about how the Creator of the universe put everything into place. I don't want you to misunderstand and say that you can walk outside this room and do the name it and claim it thing. Okay? If I just focus enough on a Cadillac, and I say it enough times, Cadillac, Cadillac, Cadillac. See, the major difference between God and us is the flesh. If you heard Bill's message yesterday, until the return of the Messiah, we will always be limited by what? Our flesh. Okay? I'm saying that because I just came from a country in which, for some reason, syllable words, they always make them two and three syllables. But never mind. Okay. You had to be where I was at to understand what I'm saying. Okay, so we now know this is energized by sound. Now this is based upon particle physics or some atomic particles. We're understanding the nature of really small stuff. And this really small stuff we can't see. That's the interesting thing about it. We can't see them. As a matter of fact, string theory, which is most physicists are on board with string theory now, are saying that we understand how it works because of the evidence of it. In other words, they understand that string theory is something they can't see. How do they know it exists? By the subsequent results of it. They see the results of it. Now, if I remember correctly, someone with red words in the New Testament talked about how the Spirit of God works. It's like the wind that blows. You cannot see it, and you know not where it comes from. So how do you know that there's a spirit? By the results of the wind. Okay? And so once again, I'm submit to you that the Bible is saying the same thing that these guys are now. And many of these scientists that are telling you this actually believe in the Messiah. Why can they not say they believe in the Messiah? Because most scientists depend upon government grants in order to survive. They don't make a lot of money otherwise. And these government grants will keep on funding them to do their research. And so once any of these guys admit that there's a religious motivation behind any of this, guess what happens to your government grant? You lose the government grant. And so once again, I want you to understand that quantum physics is just a fancy word of saying studying the really small stuff. Particle physics. Remember I concluded yesterday with what a particle was? Because all these terms that are used, we're not going to go through every one of them in the next hour, but all these terms that are used by scientists today are also used, words that you use in grammar, in your English classes. There's no coincidence that we use particles in language, and they have particle physics, okay, in the world of physics. It's no coincidence that one of the greatest well-known physicists of the day tells us that the entire universe is made up of atoms, quarks, electrons, neutrinos, and so forth, and they are all called the letters of the universe. Remember, we talked about that yesterday. Why do scientists call these the letters of the universe? Is that a coincidence? Because the Hebrew language, which according to Hebrew the words, if you will, according to Hebrews 11, verse 3, is what created the universe. So the Bible already told us that it's words that brought all the universe into existence, and they were spoken words. Sound created a frequency and a vibration. And so we know if we take a water molecule, some of you know some of this already, we know if we take a water molecule and we play just the right frequency of sound with that water molecule. Let's just say I have a whole Petri dish full of water. Okay, here. All right. And I play just the right frequency, a sound vibration, to vibrate the water. It then produces the entire spectrum of light within the water molecule. So if I take water, but then I introduce the right sound frequencies, now I produce the light, the entire light spectrum. Now that's what science knows now. We've known that quite a long time. But in the Genesis, in the beginning, already told us that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, all right? And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. Okay, and so the Spirit of God moved on the face of the what? Water. So water comes before light, right? In Genesis 1. And then God said, let there be light. So the Spirit of God moves, hovers, merachepeth, okay, in Hebrew. It hovers over the water, creates a sound and a vibration, and the next thing he says, now, let there be light. I'm going to submit to you the reason why you need light is because sound has to have something to travel on. All right, because sound pretty much operates in waves, where light operates in particles and waves. And so that's why sound, for example, can't operate in a vacuum. All right, am I getting too deep? Okay, please don't think that is a condescending statement, please. It does no good to speak if people don't understand what I'm saying, okay? Speak louder. Okay, that's the sound person's job. Okay, so they're saying lift something up there. Okay, now let's go on. So particle physics is it would be no coincidence that you would see the idea of particle physics. Remember why we call a particle in grammar is because words that are called particles only express part of the meaning of the word. Okay, in other words, a particle requires a context to understand. I gave you an example yesterday of a context. It's also critical, for example, in Genesis chapter 6, verse 3, when they come off the ark and it says, now every moving thing shall be food for you. How many of our religious friends have pointed that finger in the face and show you, see, you could eat whatever you wanted when they came off the ark? There's a particle there, a very critical particle that's used there. It's translated as every. In your English, it's kal in Hebrew, K-A-L, kal. Kal is a particle. How do we know it's a particle in Hebrew? It only has two letters. It's two consonants, kaf, lamed. So it's a particle. And what does that mean? It means it needs a context in order to understand what every means. Because the reality is this, in America, all. As a matter of fact, I understand in 1965 that the legislate, 1865, excuse me, I'm 100 years off, okay? In 1865, our Congress passed a law stating what the word all means. So when you use that word in Congress and legislation and so on and so forth, they'll have a definition of it. And what they define all to mean is including everything, excluding nothing. Now, that's what Congress decided all means. But all does not mean that in Hebrew. Your Bible was written in this language. And that's the reason why we have strayed away from that language through all the other watering downs of all the other translations. And the Father is simply saying, I know you're going to do that. I know you did that. So I'm going to return. And I'm going to turn the pure language back to the people. Why? So we can begin to get back to the concrete meanings of the Bible. And you can begin to relate. Once you understand the dynamics of this beautiful language of your Bible, you're going to start to see things in the Old Testament and the New Testament that are exactly the same that you would have never seen in Greek or English. Do you understand what I mean? You wouldn't see it reading English. You wouldn't make the connections because of the watering down of the words. The Hebrew, restoring of the Hebrew is not so we can walk around like this and go, I know Hebrew, you don't, nanner, nanner, nanner. That's not why he's turning. That's not the purpose of someone to lord it over you like some sort of priestcraft. Because that's the way I was trained in Bible school when I was a pastor. They trained me in Greek. And one of the reasons, one of the first things that you do when you come out as a pastor being trained in Greek is you say things like this. In the original Greek it says, and everybody's so impressed. And nobody can argue with you because nobody knows what you're talking about. So you say whatever you want to say. If you get the drift. Okay. And we can do the same thing with this. We're just getting back to the fundamental basis of it all, Hebrew. But we can be guilty of the same thing. It's not a priestcraft. It's a privilege to share it so we can all be involved in bringing treasures up out of the field in our Bible. Why? So at one point, we're not quite there yet, gang. At one point, we can all serve Him with one consent. That's what Zephaniah 3, that was the conclusion of Zephaniah. Why turn back the people, the language, the pure language to the people, so we can all serve Him with one consent? Okay, let's go on. Brad, shut up and go on. That's what you're trying to say. Now, here's one of the crucial verses in the New Testament that you've probably heard before, but I'm going to take it into a couple of different directions here. Colossians chapter 1, verse 15 basically says that Yeshua, it's talking about Yeshua, and said He's before all things, and He created all things by Him and for Him, and in Him, whether things in heaven, whether things in earth, or underneath the earth, you know the verses. And then it gets to 17, and it says, and He, now that is Yeshua, is before all things. In other words, He comes before, okay, the physical, okay? And by Him all things consist. That's why John 1:1 says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and God was the Word, okay? It's before. And by Him all things consist. Now in the Greek, that is sunestemi. Sunestemi is a Greek word that's not too bad of a word, okay, even though we haven't taken it back to the source word yet. But it's not too bad of a definition. It means to hold something together for the purpose of standing it up, okay? To stand something, hold it all together. As a matter of fact, in several other places in your New Testament, this word is translated as something held together. So it's in, and by Him, He is before all things, and by Him, all things are held together, all right? Now, when you take this word back into the Septuagint, back into the Tanakh, there are several Hebrew words that are translated into that one Greek word, but the one that's used, there's only like four or five, the one that's used twice is this word, tsava, something that holds all things together. They chose sunestemi in the Greek, but they're taking it from the Hebrew word tsava. And does anybody recognize the Hebrew word tsava? Yeah, if I took a mem, see, it's in its verbal form here. If I put a mem, the letter M on the front of it, I made it a noun. Now it's a mitzvah or a commandment. It's the Hebrew word for commandment. All right, the Ten Commandments and so forth, the commandments of God. And so, what is being subtly taught here? If it's blatant to me, but I'm going to be fair, okay? What's being subtly taught here is that Yeshua, the manifestation of the Word of God in the flesh, the commandments, the statutes, the ordinance of God, is what's holding all things together. It's the commandments of God. Now, I'm submitting this to you, that it's the commandments of God that created all things, and it's the commandments of God that sustains all things. That which created all things is the same thing that sustains all things. Why? Because of entropy, because of the second law of thermodynamics, because Adam and Eve sinned and fell. Now, everything in the universe is in a state of corruption because of people. Because of the people who speak forth the most important sound frequencies of all of the creation. Us. And I believe it's so imperative that the Father has sovereignly chose for just such a time as this to turn people like you, the house of Israel, if reuniting us with the house of Judah. And one of the processes he's taking us to reunite us with the house of Judah, because for centuries they have been doing the weekly Torah portions. And every week they speak forth the Torah portions. All right? And so now all of a sudden in the last 20 years in particular, we've got millions of other people collectively across the world like you and me joining with them every week with the Torah portions. Now, why do I bring this up? Let me tell you why this is an important concept. Pretend that this is a wine glass. And really, you can only do this with good crystal. Okay? It's difficult to do with a cheap wine glass. But it's something you're all with. Okay? So this is not something that most of you don't know. You're sitting in a restaurant and you got a glass of wine. You got a glass if you're adults, you have a glass of wine. Okay? You got a glass of water. Okay? Here in your cup. And you dip it in there and you start doing this number, right? Okay? Start rubbing your finger across the top, okay? And after you do this for a bit, it's going to start to resonate and make a sound, okay? And what's happening when you produce that sound, what you're doing is you're matching the natural frequency of the glass, okay? Why? Everything has a frequency. Everything makes a sound. And so when you do that, you're matching the sound. Now, after a while, as you keep doing this and going a little faster and keep moving around, you'll raise the decibel level and the glass will break. Okay? Now, you remember the old Memorex commercials? I wouldn't admit that if I were you, okay? But the Memorex commercials, remember they have a glass sitting in the room and Ella Fitzgerald would come in. Ella Fitzgerald would start singing a note. He would sing it long enough. Now, it's not because it doesn't have anything to do with her high notes or low notes. It has to do with the fact that she sings until she matches the frequency of the glass. This is important because this is what brought the walls of Jericho down, okay? Is because she sings until she matches the frequency of the glass, and then she just raises the loudness of it. She raises the decibel level. And what happens is the little molecules on the top of the glass get going so fast that they can't keep up and the glass breaks. As a matter of fact, in slow motion photography, they now know that just before that glass breaks, it does this, about a quarter of an inch all the way around the glass. The glass goes... Well, it does. Okay. And want to see that again? No. And this is on camera. And so it goes out, it bends out about a quarter of an inch, and then boom, the glass pops. Why? Because the stronger frequency will overcome the weaker one. Okay? But you do it by matching the frequency. See, that's the concept. It's you match the natural frequency of the glass, and you just raise your loudness, but you're still doing the same frequency. That is so it's not producing a different frequency. You have to produce the same one. I'm just going to submit to you, a lot of times, even in our own life as human beings, since we are human, we are made of matter, we also have a what? Frequency. We also produce sound. Many times, we don't get along with other people, primarily because we have equal frequencies, not unequal frequencies. Sometimes you have a person that just irritates the living pee-doodle. And they're just irritating, you know, you get in fights in school and you're beating whatever. And it's not that way with everybody. It's just some of you probably have someone in your life, okay, who you just don't get along with, you know, so forth, and just irritate. And chances are you're doing it's the same frequencies. And so there's a contradiction, if you will. And so that's why there was one of the reasons why when God created Adam, he took from him his opposite. Now, God in Hebrew, which is translated as mate, means opposite of in Hebrew. It's a word that means opposing. It's like two puzzle pieces, okay? So you don't want people that are the same. You want them the opposite, and then they fit together in their harmony. So that's the way it is with Adam. And so when we look into an atom, which is where atom came from, was Adam, okay? The atom comes forth in the Hebrew word Adam or Adam. And because they sound the same and they basically mean the same thing. Within the confines of an atom is also unlike particles and like particles. Okay? Like particles do what? They repel. Okay? Unlike particles attract and so forth. And so within an atom, you have a positive charge and a negative charge. Within the atom, because atom used to be one entity, there is a positive and a negative charge. Now, I'm not saying which one's the positive charge and which one's the negative charge. You can decide that for yourself. Okay. I know what the men are thinking. Okay? But the reality is this, and I'm going to say that even though chairs have a compound of particles, they're compound particles, but we're going to pretend that collectively this chair is made up of chair atoms. Okay? It's completely made up of chair atoms. And the reality that we know, since we can see really small stuff now, that's quantum physics, the reality of this chair is made up of these atoms, and if I took one of those atoms and I blew it up the size of the 99.13 nines after it of the volume of that atom is nothing. Now that's what science used to say. This is a teaching from the 1960s. This is really old understanding, okay? This is what I learned when I was in grade school, that 99.9999%, 13 nines, is actually nothing. And only 0.00013 of them, one, okay, is matter in the atom. But yet when we look at the chair, the reality is, if for all purposes, based upon the fact that everything's like that, okay, 99.9999% nothing, it's actually just unseen, okay? Not nothing. Science now knows, and you can see this on NOVA, this is not Brad, okay? You can see this, and if you read the articles and read the journals and so forth, we now understand that there's no reason whatsoever why I and you and I right now shouldn't be able to walk right through that wall. There's no reason. Based upon theoretical physics and the way things are designed in atoms, there's no reason why I can't walk, because 99.9999% of what I'm seeing here is nothing, unseen. And so there's no reason why we can't walk through a wall. And scientists understand it's very possible to walk right through a wall. What keeps me from being able to walk through the wall? We are all surrounded with an electromagnetic field. Every one of us sitting here right now, we have an electromagnetic field around us. And it's because of that electromagnetic field, Tom, that we can't walk through the wall. But here's the thing, my friend. I know you want to. Some of you are thinking to yourself, I wish I hadn't come here. I wish I could walk through the wall right now. Here's the thing. Here's what science also understands. That if you remove the electromagnetic field, you could walk right through the wall. Now, if you remember, Yeshua rises from the grave anew. Okay, obviously there was something. He had flesh and bone, right? He was not flesh and blood. Remember, see, flesh and bone I have. I'm not what you think. Okay? I'm submitting to you that science now understands that God has the ability to simply remove the electromagnetic field and this new body. And now Yeshua just appears to walk right through the wall. Okay? I want you to understand, I'm not trying to explain away God scientifically. I'm trying to show you we're beginning to understand, because the seals of Daniel chapter 12 are open. We're beginning to understand the things that are put in place, but this confusion still comes in. People don't believe who put them in place in the first place. Yes, Gordon. No. Is this long and involved, because we got a long way to go? Okay, okay.
Stand here, put here. Stand on 1 foot or the other.
Stand on 1 foot or the other?
Stand up 1 foot. Raise 1 foot.
Is this a trick everybody else is saying? And just, okay.
No, this is
okay,
cool.
Okay.
Now put your arms up.
Okay.
Be fit as stiff.
I don't know how I can do this. Okay.
See how easy it is to tip you over?
Yeah.
Now I'm going to put this here. Now I'm going to do something.
I'm already, okay. Okay, well, I can resist. Yeah, okay. You weakling. No, I'm just kidding.
It's the very thing that you speak to.
Okay.
Your bioelectric field, put in this for golfers and stuff. If it's near you, it enhances this stuff and puts it in your field, you're balanced.
Give it to Tiger Woods. He's not balanced. Well, that was very interesting. Okay. I think I've seen something like that. I'm glad you kept it in context. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate that. Okay, what was I talking about? In him all things consist. And so, in the 1960s, we understood that since there's like particles in an atom, which makes up this chair, all right? And like particles do what? they repel. So in the 1960s, science understood that for all intents and purposes, this chair should explode. For all intents and purposes, everything in the universe should explode, because everything is made up of what? Atoms. And in the atoms is like particles, and like particles repel. So, and I'm quoting this almost verbatim for my 1964 or 1968 science teacher. Here's what he said. He said, but something is holding it all together. Surprise! I wish I knew then, because I said, excuse me, Mr. Professor, but, okay. The scriptures already told us what's holding things together. So I'm proposing to you that since the whole universe is made up of these things, and now they understand it's sound that created all things in the universe, and it's sound that sustained all things in the universe, that corrupt sound can corrupt or sound can restore. It depends upon the sound, because sound is what produces it all, sound is what sustains it all, and so it depends upon the frequencies of the sound as to whether it sustains the universe or corrupts the universe. And I'm proposing to you that the Father, at just such a time as this, in the history of everything, has sovereignly chosen to restore the Torah back to His people at just such a time as this, that we study these things together, hello, with all our other brethren, okay? And now, why? Because in the past, remember, the more you raise the decibel level, the more you destroy the other sound. Okay? There's a heavenly battle going on, my friends. That's heavenly places. We have spiritual battles going on in heavenly places. All right? And I'm telling you that the stronger frequency will overcome the weaker frequency and cause it to be one with it. Now, I'll give you an example of that, and they've already done this test, but you can do it at home. Take two grandfather clocks. Do it tonight if you have a chance. Yeah, right. Take two grandfather clocks and take the pendulums and swing them opposite directions. Okay? So they're going like this. Then go to bed and get up in the morning and they'll be doing this. Okay? Because one will always have a stronger frequency than the other one. Hi, dear. How you doing, honey? Hi. It's my daughter in the back. Just wanted to... Oh, I didn't mean to embarrass you. She'll get on to me for this later. Okay. Because the stronger frequency, the weaker frequency will always succumb to the stronger one. I'm going to submit to you that's possibly one of the reasons why Paul said that bad company corrupts good morals. Because many times the bad company just has a stronger frequency. And sometimes those stronger frequencies are represented by, here we go, music. Yes. Yes. And there's another concept called self-fulfilling prophecy, which I believe is what the History Channel's doing right now. But that's a whole other discussion, okay? Okay? Okay, let's talk for a few minutes about the dynamics of sound, particular respect to music, because we know that the destructive... So let's start identifying the destructive frequencies as opposed to the restorative frequencies. The restorative frequencies are the higher frequencies, all right? Like what would be produced by sweet violins in a concerto or something by Bach or Beethoven or something like that. The higher frequencies. The destructive frequencies are the lower thumping frequencies in particular, all right? And once you get to a certain level, and you can determine that level, okay, as to what it is, then there's a window in lower frequencies. There's a window just before your internal organs begin to melt, okay? There is a window, some say it's between 7.5 to 9 or 10 hertz, okay? In which it's just low enough to produce a state of euphoria. Okay, so in other words, it's just before you go into your internal organs melting, okay? And we'll discuss this in more detail in a minute here. There's a time when a state of euphoria. Not only can you produce a state of euphoria in a large group of people, but you can get them to such a high state that they believe that they've been healed. Okay? And they start to... And they actually start to feel better. Okay? I mean, that's the kind of the point of it. Okay? And that can last, say, from 2 to 4 days. From 2 to 4 days. That you can go into the state of euphoria. But once it gets it down to a certain level, then it starts to be destructive. Now, I want to give you one example here with my wife, and I'm going to use a particular Christian group as an because they were the ones that we were listening to, but I like them. Yeah, I know some of you are messianic going, what are you doing liking those guys? Well, I do like them, sorry. Okay? They're called the Newsboys. Okay? Now, some of you know what I'm talking about. I happen to like the Newsboys. They're a little quirky, okay? But, you know, something in a microwave and it's kind of weird. Okay. My youth group at the church I was pastoring, this is years ago, the youth minister couldn't go. And they were down with a group in Grand Junction called Allen and Plank or something like that. It was a bunch of them like that. And so I took the youth group down there to listen to these guys. And we get in there and... Never seen these guys live before. I had a CD of them or a tape or something. And the music started. And I'm telling you, the thumping bass was so incredible. Harold collapsed on the floor, grabbing your heart. 3 or 4 people down the aisle, away from her on the other side of the aisle, also began to get down to try. To use the bunny one. That's because I took the battery out. No, it's red. It's red. Maybe working, but it's red. Can you not change the battery, or was that out of the budget? Something. Test. Hello. Guess what? Okay, where there's red, they say it's on. Okay, let's put this here. Okay, back to the healing part. Yes. That's the reason why we need to be very careful what we choose to play, okay? Because the tendency, because of the nature of the culture, I know I'm stepping on some feet here, but because of the nature of the secular culture, is for us to gravitate toward this kind of low, thumping kind of resonancy of sound vibrations and so forth, and... rather than the sweeter, higher melodies and so forth. I'm not saying you need to be relegated to classical music, but yes, sound does two things, ma'am, and I mentioned that earlier. It can restore and heal, because when Yeshua heals people, He speaks to them, okay? He prays, the effectual, fervent prayer, okay, of a man, and that's how people get healed. Gather the elders together, and what are they doing? Do they just stand there and go... They speak and they pray, and whatever words they use, there is a frequency, a typical frequency to those words, And I'm simply saying I believe that the Father sovereignly chose to restore this once understood to be dead language for just such a time as this, so that we can begin speaking these things and having a normal part of our lives, so forth. One example would be just simply saying his name the way it was given to him, okay, and so forth. But see, this is not a zero-sum game. Does everybody know what zero-sum means? It's not 100 or zero, okay? As if the word Jesus destroys and the word Yeshua completely restores, okay? It's not a zero-sum game here. I'm not trying to say that, because there's lots of people that are healed in the name of who? Jesus, okay? And we're healed in the name of Yeshua, okay? That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that we're now beginning to simply understand, because things that limits us as to what God can do, or Yeshua, is because of the flesh. We just don't like to think that we're doing anything in the flesh. Because anytime we think we're faithful to God and we do something and nothing happens, our automatic conclusion is that God doesn't want to heal. But there's never a thought of maybe I'm still doing something in my flesh, because that's self-condemnation and we don't want to get people into that. But it's the flesh that keeps us from being able to do the things that Yeshua did. Now notice that Yeshua was 100% successful when he healed, because he listened to the Father 100% of the time. And then he said something very interesting to his people. He said that you shall do greater things than I have done. Why do you think that is? Because more people doing what he did raises the decibel level, okay? And it can destroy the enemy. If you can see the glass as being the enemy, okay? And that you raise the decibel level. The stronger frequency will overcome the weaker frequency. In other words, it will actually absorb the frequency, because everything made of mass and matter would do that. And so I'm simply saying to you that our fighting and our speaking and our returning to God's ways, his words, his commandments, has started us in the process of restoring and preparation for the whole system to be done away with. Because 2 Peter says this. I didn't plan on talking about this, but let me remind you what 2 Peter says. Because I haven't got into dark energy and dark matter. And how long have I got? I got a half an hour. We got to get into string theory yet. Let's go on. Okay, let's get past this. The invisible things, we need to encourage, blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's start with this. One of the things that those in the scientific field have understood for a long time, that we also understand, that Isaiah told us seven times in his book alone. Seven times in the book of Isaiah, we are told that the end is revealed where? Beginning. That is the major foundation of the scientific fields today. In other words, they're always trying to go back to the origin of things. And whether you're an astrophysicist, whether you're looking to the deep recesses of space, or whether you're looking inside of a cell or an atom, you're always trying to find the smallest thing. And when they did, of course, they called that thing the Big Bang, right? The idea was that it was in the beginning, whatever this small thing was, right? Okay, and then it produced everything that we have in the universe right now. And so that's been the fundamental foundational theory of this thinking process for quite a while, the Big Bang. So that's why they're all looking for the smallest thing. And generally, in scientific textbooks throughout the last 50 years of my life, graphically, the smallest thing is generally represented by a dot. That's the way they do it. Sometimes they call it a particle, okay, but it's a dot. So in other words, I can stand here and talk about the smallest thing, but if I'm going to go teach kids in a high school or a college, and I've got it in a textbook that they're going to read, I'm going to have to take my words and put it into some kind of picture that everybody can understand. And so they generally represent it by a dot. And so decades ago, when they discovered the concept of molecules and so forth, at that time, that was what they thought was the smallest thing. I don't have time to go into it now, but they even chose the words. They were careful to chose particular words to describe these dots. But that was the smallest dot. Until some smart scientist came along and said, well, wouldn't half a molecule be smaller than a molecule? And the scientist says, yes, I think that's right. So they got their petri dishes out and their bubbly chemicals and so forth, and they worked on it. And pretty soon after a while, they said, no, we've decided this is the smallest thing. We've discovered the atom. And how did they represent the atom? By a smaller dot. Okay? And so now we have a smaller dot. Until some smart aleck scientist comes along and says, well, wouldn't half an atom be smaller than an atom? The scientist says, yes, I think you're right. So they got out their petri dishes and their bubbly chemicals and so forth, and they did an experiment. And then finally, after a while, they decided, no, now we've discovered, and we put this on the front page of the newspaper, that actually the smallest thing are protons and neutrons, which were represented by what? A smaller dot. Okay? And so some smart aleck scientist comes along and says, wouldn't half a proton be smaller than a proton? Oh, yes. So they got out their petri dishes and they bought them chemicals and so forth, and they worked a while. And finally, they discovered not too long ago that now we've discovered that actually the smallest thing in the universe that everything comes forth from is a quark. And a quark represented by what? A smaller dot. Until some smart aleck scientist comes along and says, wouldn't half a quark be smaller than a quark? And the scientific community said, no, half a quark is a pint. And so, okay, that was bad, I understand, okay, but then they got out their petri dishes and then bubbly chemicals again, and now about 1967, this is like 50, almost 45 year understanding now, okay, it just came into light here in the last decade. It became real popular. Actually, Einstein, Albert Einstein's the one that really is the discoverer of string theory. He called it unified theory when he was alive up on the earth. And it's the only one of his theories that ever depressed him unto his death, because he couldn't prove it. Okay? And so it's resurfaced today in what we call string theory. Now, let's give you this graph as an example. Let's start out with the apple. Okay? That's something we can physically see. An apple is made of mass and matter, but under and that the cork and the strings are also made of mass and matter. So this has a frequency, atoms have a frequency, electrons, these strings all vibrate and all have a frequency. Are you with me? So the idea is that no matter how small we get, it still has a frequency and is the basis for the frequencies of everything else. Are you with me? Okay? Because they understand that everything made in the universe comes from these things. So now they break down the atoms, because the apple is made up of what? Apple atoms. Okay? We break those down to protons and neutrons. They're in a cluster in the nucleus here. Okay? So you got the electrons. Remember, what are the electrons doing? They're going around, spinning around the protons and the neutrons. Everything is made up of this. So everything is energy. Right? They understand, because everything is made up of atoms, and every atom has protons and neutrons, and there's electrons spinning around these things, so everything is energized, and everything is moving, and because it's moving, it's producing a frequency. And as I said earlier, that's why you can put a perfect sound frequency over water and produce the entire light spectrum. And that's the exact order that God gave it in the beginning. First the water, then the sound, then the light. So once again, God one, scientist zero. Okay? He's always going to win, all right? And eventually, good, true, sound science will always come in line with what the scriptures told us in the first place. It's just that the average person in this country has no concept of that. Even religious people, because we have been trained and taught, okay? We have been trained to think that we deal in the religious world, and then there's the rational scientific world over here. Now we're beginning to understand the concept of block logic and Hebrew, that they're actually both true. Okay? Now, we get down to the breakdown of what's contained within protons and neutrons, and they're called quarks, and we break down the... Now, we're still three-dimensional here. Three-dimensional, 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 three-dimensional. But once we break it down to these little strings, they're now one-dimensional. They're so incredibly small, actually only one dimension. And there's two kinds of strings. There's open strings and there's closed ones. Here's an example of two closed strings, all right? Now, the closed strings are called strings of freedom. Freedom strings is what they're called. Now, the reason why they gave it, whew, getting a sweat like crazy here. The reason why they call them that is because strings have the freedom to be able to go in and out of our three-dimensional universe. Because what science began to understand when they saw the strings is that there's another existence, another universe other than the physical one we live in. Really? I mean, the scriptures are full of it from the beginning, that Yeshua came into the world, okay? And there's, we have called heavenly places, okay, and so on and so forth. We've always been taught that there's another existence other than the physical one we have. It's just now, lately, scientists are beginning to figure out, oh, they're just using scientific terminology to describe the same thing. And so they understand that these closed strings have the freedom, like Yeshua did, to go in and out, okay, of these universes. Okay, the open strings, I don't have it up here, but the open strings kind of look like this, kind of like an omega, the Greek letter omega. Okay, they kind of look like this. In other words, they have two poles here. And because they have two poles, they're attached to, okay, the present universe that we're in. Okay, now I know this sounds weird. I'm describing it from their end, and I'm trying to put it in the simplest terms that I can. I'm simply saying to you, when we get to the results of these things, we're realizing that what comprises everything in the universe, this is from their point of view, comes down to what's called a string. And this string, this individual string, which makes up all things, if it vibrates a certain way, it's a chair. If it vibrates another certain way, it's a rock. If it vibrates another way, it's a piece of plastic. If it vibrates and produces another sound, it's an apple or a pear. You understand what I mean? In other words, the vibration determines what it is. The sound that it makes. Adam was told to give names to all the animals, and that determined what. Okay, try not to get too weird here, okay, but I want you to think about the fact that the Bible, you have to decide right now. You have to make a decision before you leave this room. Either the Bible is true and the Father means what He says, or let's just spiritualize the whole thing of our life, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. I'm simply saying to you, hundreds of years ago, especially in the Age of Enlightenment period, okay? Especially in what the period we call the Age of Enlightenment, 16th, 17th century and so forth, where men began to get telescopes and began to understand things. Because people didn't know the Bible well, people who believed in the Bible were like, you know, superstitious and so forth, okay? And as a matter of fact, in the 11th century, those of us who believe in the Bible were not superstitious because see, our Bible then told us that the earth is a sphere that hangs upon the heavens upon nothing. That's what our Bibles always told us. But science, with their understanding at that time, said this is a proof that your Bible is not real. It's not written by someone who's all-knowing, because everybody with half a brain knows the earth is flat. Okay? And so you buy people, but I'm telling you, as time goes on, every religious book that was written by man, as time goes on and men begins to understand things, their books are up in the night. If man wrote the book, as we begin to understand things, you begin to realize that those things were said to those people at the time because nobody knew the difference anyway. You could pretty much say whatever you wanted to say in a religious book in the 15th century, even up to
you could say that. In 400 A.D.,
okay? And people go, well, what do I know? Okay? All right, I'm sorry I get a little carried away once in a while. Okay, but these little strings are confined to the earth and they vibrate it. So how they vibrate determines on what they are. So how the things are voiced and sound determines what it is. That's what God in the beginning said, and God said, and God called. And then it says, and that's the way it was. And when it was done, He says, and it's good. Means it's complete, it's done. And then at the end of the 6 days, He says it's not only good, but it's what? Very good. Now go forth and multiply after yourselves. All right? Now, what's the difference between God doing that and me doing that, which is what some people teach, you know? Flesh? It's the flesh that keeps us from doing that. But see, there will be a time when we will have the electromagnetic fields removed from us, and we will be able to be like He is, the Bible says. I'm just saying that used to be just some kind of fancy language, but now we know literally how these things operate in our universe.
That's actually like one of the
Yeah, well, we won't be gods. Okay, that sounds like that. We will be like Yeshua. Okay, we'll be like Yeshua. Now, I would have to sternly disagree that we will never become gods. Okay, and I want to make that clear. Okay, yeah, to be like him. We'd be like, we'll see him as he is, and we'd be like he is. Okay, yes, Matt. Now say that.
Pre-flood and post-flood, separating the Maya from the Shemaya.
Okay, separating the waters from the heavens and so forth. Okay, and... the electromagnetic field. Okay, I got it.
The electromagnetic field, pre-flood.
Okay, yes, I know what you mean. Yes, and the clouds opened up and earth opened up and the flood, so forth. Yes, that would be applied to that as well, the pre-flood. Sorry, I misunderstood that for a second. Okay, you already know this. God said, let there be light, and there was light. Yeshua says, I came forth from the Father, and I'm coming to this world. Again, I leave the world and go to the Father. So he had the ability to be able to... He came from something. In other words, there is an existence other than our own. Other than this physical universe that we are living in, this three-dimensional physical universe, we are... there is another existence somewhere. Now, unfortunately, right now, and I don't know that there's anybody here who can prove it, current theoretical physics teaches that there are 11 universes. 11 universes. With the three-dimensional one plus one in our universe, which is time. Time is considered to be a universe. And then there's six universes that fold in on themselves. I want to go into that right now, okay? And so they believe that there's 11 of them, all right? I'm just bringing this up as well. Now I come to you. These things I speak in the world that they might have my joy fulfilled in them, okay? In the world. Clearly, Paul, for example, went up to what we call the what? Third heaven. There was something other than the physical universe that we are confined to because of the what? The flesh. Okay, that he was able to enter into. Matthew 24:35, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall never pass away, because they're not made of mass and matter, and so they're not in a state of corruption. Only things made of mass and matter can corrupt. All right? His words are eternal, and they fade away because they're not made of mass and matter. They're the things that created all things. So all the things made of mass and matter are in a state of corruption. Paul and the whole deal with the going up their heaven. I mentioned that already. I want to get to dark energy and dark matter here real quick. Heard and understood. Ephesians chapter 12. There's something going on in the heavens. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Now, I've only got about 15 minutes here, so I want to get back to sound for just a minute. Remember I told you we put the stainless steel block here, and we can extrapolate out of that block everything that was spoken here, okay? So now I'm saying to you, we have the technology to be able to remove sound embedded in what? Rocks. So when Yeshua said that even these rocks could cry out, now is that just a metaphor, or literally do we understand that rocks can cry out? Adam's blood from the ground. Joshua chapter 24, you're probably well aware of. In Joshua chapter 24, verse 24, it says, and I quote, "And the people said unto Joshua, Yahweh our God, we will serve, his voice will we obey. So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and set them a statute and an ordinance in Shechem. Joshua wrote these words in the book of the Torah of God, and he took a great stone and set it up under the oak and was by the sanctuary of Yahweh. And Joshua said unto all the people, Behold, this stone shall be a witness unto us, for it has heard all the words of Yahweh which he spoke unto us." What has heard all the words? The stone. "And it will be a witness unto us." Now, once again, you have to decide, is that just fancy King James poetry? Or can that stone, can everything that was said there that day be a witness someday later and be taken out of the stone? The reason why I say that is because, yes, we have even the technology to be able to do this. Now, I'm really not bringing this up to create any fuzzies in anybody. That's not the purpose. What I'm trying to say is that we have a system, a culture out there that's accusing you and me of being the ones who have kooky ideas, okay, about things because we believe in the Bible. When virtually every physicist today, because every week more sign on board to it, virtually every physicist today understands the concept of string theory, and it's the basis for all the other things that they believe in. And here's the comment of every one of the string theorists, and that is this. We only have one problem with string theory, which is what they all believe in, all right? What all the scientists believe in. We do not have any observable evidence of any of this. Now, isn't that what we read earlier? Is what we are getting accused of believing in spite of the evidence? Is that direct quotes of the Clarence Darrows and the Richard Hawkins and so forth, people of the world? That we are the ones that are operating on no evidence, and they admit that the fundamental things that they believe in, they're operating with no observable evidence of what they're trying to say, yet all of them believe in it. As a matter of fact, the FBI understands in the theory of this how there's certain things in the world that absorb frequencies better than other things. The two primary ones is your blood and your bones. Your blood and your bones. So I suggest this, because I don't have time to go into all the details, but go home and look up verses in which it talks about bones crying out and the fire shut up in your bones and things like that. Read verses concerning the bones, because bones are one of the parts of your body that absorb frequencies the best. But the best one is blood, is able to absorb sound. Yeah, the life is in the blood. I'm going to admit to you that that's more literal, again, than we think, that your life is actually in your blood. And the FBI knows that, and that's the reason why they're investigating the idea that they can go to a murder based upon the fundamental theory of your iPods, actually is what this is all based upon, that they can go to a murder scene where a woman's been murdered, they can collect the blood and play back out of her blood and you know who the murderer is just like that. Just play it back in her blood, because everything that happened in the last 10 minutes of her life is recorded right there in their blood, and they can simply play it back. Something that she mentioned earlier that I did want to mention, that our military has understand the concept of sound for quite a long time. They know that they can go into a village and they can produce a sound that matches the frequency of the building that they want to take down, and they just raise the decibel level and down the building comes. Now, when you go back and you read Joshua, when you read the whole incident at Jericho, you'll notice that the first thing he tells them to do is walk in silence. 6 days and walk around in silence. Just imagine that you're taking the glass and you first put your finger in, okay, and there's nothing for a long time, okay, because you got to get to that point where you start producing, equaling the frequency. And then he says, blow the shofar. That's first, right? Walk around 6 days, blow the shofar. Now you're matching the frequencies. Now everybody shout with a great, you just raised the decibel. Everybody's doing it at the same time. With a great shout, everybody's shouting. What happens? Not only does it come down, but the rabbinic understanding is it just went, okay? And even it probably went a foot down into the ground. It just didn't, like the towers. It went like that. Immediately went down. Yes. Okay, that's one of the things that I want to talk about. First of all, we already have recorded now. Now, the question is, you know, they would have known. How would they know back then? But we know, we've already done enough experiments to know the frequencies that various things make up on this planet, like colors. Every color has a frequency. Okay, blue has a frequency. Yellow has a frequency, red has a frequency, and we already know, since those things are static, okay, we already know what their frequencies are. Now, a slight change in the red will have a slight change in the frequency. So we know that every frequency has a color. Mackie, I don't know if you guys are any musicians in here, but Mackie is a very well-known producer of soundboards. Mackie soundboards, or maybe one back there for all I know. Mackie's already coming out with a soundboard in which you don't have to have sound technicians at concerts anymore. They don't need to pay a well-trained sound technician to come into a concert or something and be able to, through his experience and his hearing and doing a lot, be able to match the sound for the size of that auditorium. That's what sound technicians do. They come into a large auditorium and they're experienced at what they do. And you have to pay them a lot of money, because if you're the band, you want good sound. You can work as hard as you want to on the music, but if your sound ain't no good, the last 5 years goes right down the tube. And you know what I'm talking about. So sound technicians make a lot of money, and they generally always arrive 5 minutes before you're going to play. You know how that is. Okay. Now, And they would master. But now Mackie's producing soundboards in which all you do is put the soundboard there, you start playing your instruments, and every time the sound reaches its perfect peak, it's represented by a color. So there's these lights on the side of the sound, and as soon as the guitar and the tom-tom and the floor tom and cymbals and stuff all match, and they're all represented by colors, because when they play on their cymbal, it matches the frequency of that color. And so they just match the colors on the soundboard, and they don't need the sound technician there anymore. As a matter of fact, there is a professor in off the shores of Galilee in the town of Tiberias in Israel that took the, because he knew, like I know, like maybe some of you know, the precise design of the Hebrew language. That this language is the design language in the universe. No language like it on the planet. And it's design. And the reason why we know it's design, because the Word of God created all things, and everything we see is by design. Our eyes, okay, everything's design. Our watches, everything, all right? And so the Word of God created all those things. And so with armed with that knowledge, was and this is one of the reasons why Isaac Newton was able to produce the laws of motion. Why? He knew the Scriptures. He was a theologian. And he knew the Scriptures. And so with armed with that knowledge, he already had an advantage over the other scientists. Because he was armed with the one who created all this in the first place. And so this guy, knowing that the Hebrew language is design, he took a graph. And if you've ever worked with mathematics, any guys involved in math, and still remember your math if it's been a while, okay? You know how graphs work. When you produce a graph, okay, and you know what it means when you. I wish I had a marking board with a certain amount of data here, a certain amount of data here, and you map. And the, that means, right? That means that all this is equal to this. Okay, that's the reason why you produce that perfect line in the middle. And so we took all the frequencies of the five colors in the tabernacle. Okay. The decay, the blue and the purple and the scarlet and the gold. He took all the frequencies of those colors. See, each color has a frequency. All right? And he put them up this direction. And then down here, he put the numerical value of tekelet, argamon, shani. He put the numerical value of each one of those words in Hebrew. Those colors, the numerical value of each one of those colors in Hebrew. He put that down at the bottom of the graph. So the sound frequency of the colors up here and the numerical value of each one of the Hebrew words representing those colors were down here, and the line was perfectly in the middle. It was perfectly matched. He went to NASA, and you can do this with virtually everything in the Scriptures because it's by absolute design. He went to NASA and found out the precise diameters of the Earth, the Sun, and the Moon. And he put the precise diameters of the Earth, the Sun, and the Moon up this part of the graph. And then he put the numerical values of Earth, Sun, and Moon in Hebrew down at the bottom of the graph. And guess what kind of line he drew? Straight up the middle. In other words, the numerical value of words match the exact frequencies of the colors as well. And this goes on and on and on. Now let's talk very quickly, because I got 6 minutes or something like that, to talk about another discovery here of late that threw the whole Big Bang Theory out the window and turned everybody into a big tizzy. Okay? This happened quite a long time ago as well. I don't remember the precise date, so I don't want to stick my neck out there. But it was soon after we sent the Hubble telescope. I don't know if anybody remembers when the Hubble telescope went up there, but it was after that, okay? Because it couldn't have been before that. So before the Hubble telescope, it was assumed by scientists that things started, all the creation started with a Big Bang. Remember? Over time, it's gone from 3 billion years to 4 billion years to 10 billion years. Now it's 16.7 billion years. I would imagine by next year it'll be up to 20, okay? Because every time they're wrong about something, they just expand the time. Well, how convenient, okay? And that's how they do it, all right? Which puts it into an arena that nobody can prove one way or the other. So before they had evidence of a Big Bang theory, that was the common thought. That whatever this smallest thing represented by what? A dot was, it exploded, okay? And they knew based upon the laws of physics. Now there's a difference between theoretical physics and the laws of physics. They knew based upon the laws of physics that if you take something and explode it, that the particles, okay, of the explosion will go in an outward direction, and they will be fast at first, and they will slow down. as time goes on. Okay? That's the laws of physics. Okay? That's kind of a given. All right? And so they were basing the whole Big Bang Theory on that. And so they looked at the universe before they sent the Hubble telescope out there and went, well, after 16.7 years, the universe is in a state of slowing down. Until they sent the Hubble spacecraft up there, and the Hubble spacecraft sent back pictures of these spinning galaxies and their supernovas and so forth speeding up. They were going faster. Well, whoa, this blows the whole laws of physics. Okay? So remember, the reason why a theory always remains a theory is because if it violates a law, it can never be a law. That's why evolution is always called a theory, because it violates too many laws. All right? And so the theory was, they called it a law, but the theory was that things would slow down out over time as things began to spread out in an ever-expanding universe. But the evidence, isn't that what we're to live by? Substance and evidence. The evidence that comes in is that when they saw these spinning galaxies, you have the darker matter in the middle, which by all means of the laws of physics should be spinning faster than the lighter material that you're seeing behind it. And they have also the ability through the Hubble spacecraft to be able to measure the gravitational pull of everything that produces light. Are you with me? They can measure the gravitational pull of everything that produces light. Light is something that's visible, okay, Rick, so you can see it, all right? And they have the ability to measure it. And for a long time, they've been able to do that. And so they realize as they measured particular galaxies that there's hundreds of times more gravitational pull than the evidence of the light that's produced. In other words, they have the ability to measure the light, but there's hundreds of times more gravitational pull there, Rick, than what's visible. And so they said there must be some things that have a gravitational pull that we just can't see. There's just things going on in the universe we can't see. And so at first said it was all called dark matter. And now they realize that of everything that's within our universe that they can verify, 95% of the universe, now that's pretty close to the same ratio that's in an atom. Okay? Off by 4%, which is quite a bit overall, okay? But you know, they're both in the 90s. 95% of the universe is nothing. It's unseen, and they called it dark matter. Only 5% of the universe is seen. The rest is all unseen. And they concluded, based upon the evidence this time, not their theories, that everything that is seen comes forth from what is not seen. You think? I wish we could do this all day, but it's what do you want to say to these guys? It's almost like they refuse to believe. They wake up every morning refusing to believe that there's a big ball of fire in the sky. I just refuse to believe that. Oh no, really? It's called the sun. It's really hot. It's a big ball. No, I'm sorry. I don't believe in this. Against my belief system. I'm a non-sun guy. I don't believe in this, sir. Okay, no, not me. So you know what they have to do? They spend the rest of their life explaining why they're warm and where the light comes from. Since they refuse to believe that there's a big ball of fire in the sky, they've got to come up with reasons, Rick, why we're hot, warm today and why it's light out. And so they come up with all these theories. And we all swallow it like pawns on a chessboard, okay? We all swallow all of their theories when our lives should be based upon what? Substance and evidence. And so after a while, they begin to realize we've got to reevaluate the whole Big Bang theory because the evidence contradicts our view that the universe should be slowing down instead of speeding up. But now they waited for more evidence. And now the Hubble spacecraft brings in more evidence. And now they're realizing we're wrong again. Does that surprise you? Okay. Wrong again. Actually, what we're seeing, observing in the universe, is that some are speeding up and some are slowing down. In other words, it's speeding up and slowing down and speeding up and slowing down. And I'm using one of the words they use. They said, now we believe that the universe is basically 74% dark matter, okay, and about 21% dark energy, okay? And that these dark energy, these invisible things in heavenly places are battling each other. Now, I'm using their word. In other words, they're admitting that there's wars going on in heavenly places And the dark matter, if the dark matter overcomes it, the universe is in a state of being impeded and corrupted. Okay, that's what entropy does. It slows things down. Okay, but if the dark energy wins, if you will, and sometimes they don't know which one is really which. Okay, but if the dark energy overcomes it, then the universe speeds up. Now, here's what I'm going to submit to you. This is Brad's opinion, but I'm basing it upon everything that we've talked about so far. The Bible talks over and over about spiritual things going on in heavenly places. I'm submitting to you right now that my belief, and I believe we're going to have more evidence as time goes on, that what makes the difference in whether the universe speeds up or slows down is sound coming from you and me. Because we know that sound frequencies affect other frequencies. That's how it works. And the stronger one will always cause the weaker one to come into balance and absorb it, so they both go the same way. And there's a battle going on in heavenly places here. Now, I'm going to also close with this. Even though they... Oh, I've got 5 minutes. Okay. Even though they say this causing it to speed up, I'm going to submit to you that it's not really speeding it up. What we're going to find out is that the dark matter impedes the universe from expanding, if you will, and it's the dark energy that brings it back into balance. It brings it back into balance. The idea is not that we don't want to hurry things up or slow things down, don't we? We want it to be in our Father's time, all right? And so our obedience, and our obedience is expressed how? By the things we say and the things we do. And every time I do something, it produces a frequency. And every time I say something, it produces a frequency. And it affects the frequency of everyone around me. There's things that I can say that corrupt me, okay? But there's things that I can do in your life, Rick, if we hung around, that would affect you, okay? Please, let me just close with this. Please be careful what you say. Please don't believe that stupid saying that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Ask a little child that's you know, screamed at and yelled out and called an idiot and incapable of doing things day after day after day. Ask that little child if they wouldn't rather have somebody just hit them with a stone. Okay? The power of words in our life, because words can restore, or words can destroy people and corrupt things. Let's just be careful, I guess is all I'm saying. I'm not sitting here to give you some kind of, you know, wish for a Cadillac thing. That's not the point. If you got that, I mean, you didn't hear anything I said. Okay? The point is to change us, to change the way we think and the things that we say, and that we encourage people. And even if we have words that need to straighten something out, that we're careful about how we even say those things. Because good intentions can still be destructive in the way we do it. And I hate to sound like or something, but, you know, can't we just all get along? I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm just saying, understand from this point forward how powerful the things you say affect everyone around you. Okay? And that it's no coincidence that the Father has sovereignly chosen to restore and turn back to the Torah, to the peoples, and the pure language for just such a time as this. Okay? Thank you guys for coming to this class. I appreciate it. If you want to stand.